available in more homes than the Pac-12 Network, we are the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online.
And here he goes, Miles Jack.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com.
Liner going to try to sneak it ahead. Touchdown, SC!
We are the Podcast of Champions. Oh, sorry. Sorry about that. I'm David Woods, Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network.
That wasn't planned, folks. And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network. Together, we make the Podcast of Champions, talking all things Pac-12 football. And I'm guessing by the start of this show, maybe a little Pac-12 hoops today.
Oh, you mean that little thing I had playing? Yeah, we're talking hoops, baby. Because UCLA's in the Final Four.
Has that happened in your lifetime? Is that's been a thing?
Happened a few times in my lifetime. Nice. Happened a few times in my college lifetime, which is about the best time to be have your school be good at sports.
Yeah,
because you can get maximum drunk when it's happening. you know, it was a sad time though, because USC missed out on its first Final Four in what, 70 years?
Something like 80? That, like the 50s.
Yeah. Oregon State, very sadly, missing out on the Final Four, but very cool, making the Elite Eight. And, you know, for that plucky upstart program, USC, also making an Elite Eight. That's a big one. But UCLA...
First time in 20 years they were in the Elite Eight, so it's been a while since they've done that.
I'm well aware of that, actually. First time since Sam Clancy and his fellas made it to the Elite Eight. But UCLA, right back where it belongs, baby. Right among the nation's elite. Is it doing it as an 11 seed that had to play in a play-in game? Sure. But that's just the magic of the four letters, baby. I'm a full honk right now. I am in full honk mode.
I've seen your tweets, and I'm glad you liked my response to your tweet about all the...
Have I convinced myself that there is not only a path to victory against Gonzaga, but there is a massive highway? Yeah. Oh, yeah, I have. Yeah, I have. There's a friggin' Audubon to victory in my brain right now.
It was overall, though, we don't talk a lot of hoops here, but having three Pac-12 teams in the Elite Eight was certainly something. And, you know, two of them had to play each other, so another one could have had that opportunity in Oregon. And John Wilner wrote about, you know, just like in football, you know, it's great if Washington, Oregon, or someone, like, makes a run. But it helps the conference when USC makes a run. And he said the same thing for UCLA. Like, if Oregon State made the Final Four or USC made the Final Four, it would not be as impactful for the Pac-12 as if UCLA, even as an 11 seed, even as a play-in team, making the Final Four. So that was an impressive win. Gonzaga looks really freaking good. So, you know, making the Final Four is great. But, I mean, anything on top of this, Dave, has to be gravy.
Everything since I think BYU has been gravy for UCLA. And I think that, I mean, to build on Wilner's point, that's a reason why, not to get too into hoops and not to get too honky, that's a reason why this is actually so significant, because UCLA is making a Final Four in a year where it very much should not be making a run at the Final Four and a national championship. This was a program that, given all the injuries and everything, should have been a year away. Like, next year, UCLA will probably be a preseason top five, top ten team, and everyone will be expecting them to be a high seed and make a deep run. This year was not that. By the end of the year, it was just make the tournament and then hope. And for them to make the Final Four in a year like that, it just adds a little luster to it to be UCLA doing that, especially preceding what a lot of people are expecting to come in the next couple of years, because Mick Cronin's recruiting really well, picked up the number one player in California for next year and the year after that. So there's a very good chance that UCLA is going to be among the elite for the next couple of years, and to do this in a year where they weren't supposed to be, that adds to the effect. I agree with him to an extent. Oregon State making it, it feels more like a one-off, especially doing it with a bunch of seniors. USC, the thing is, Andy Enfield is recruiting really well, so you could make an argument that they're, you know, going to be sustainably decent for a while. It's just, I think anybody could see watching Gonzaga, there's a, you know, some lack of cohesion there at times, and they tend to kind of play up or down depending on just vagaries of time and space, which I think is generally a reflection on coaching. But he's certainly able to get talent into that program. But yeah, for UCLA to do it with their kind of building towards something, you know, potentially even more sustainable in the future, is obviously a very good sign for the program, but also for the conference, because generally the conference looks better when UCLA looks better.
Just, you know, general watching Oregon State, they just sort of like kind of fell back. It's sort of like they fell back to the norm maybe a little. That's my gut feeling. No basketball expert. For USC, I just felt Mark Few completely outcoached Andy Enfield. It just looked like, hey, everyone thought that this long zone could cause problems. And what did they do? They shot over the zone and then crashed the boards and got rebounds. So it didn't matter if they missed the shot over the 7-footer trying to block them. They got the rebound and then they put it back up and in. It just seemed like Gonzaga like looked at the film, go, oh, this is how you beat this team, and did it. You know what I mean? Like that's my gut feeling.
I was kind of shocked actually watching that defensive game plan. It was so like the zone they played was so soft. Gonzaga was able to get into the middle of it, just in the middle of the key, just with such ease that it was almost no resistance whatsoever. And that was the odd thing for me, that they didn't have a better handle on what you need. Because, frankly, running any zone against Gonzaga is a recipe for disaster. And they just didn't look like they were particularly well-versed on how to even play zone against a team like that. Like, you've really got to deny any kind of entry pass into that, into the key area. Like, they've got to get it maybe, you know, up above the elbow, but not that deep, and it just allowed way too much playmaking. But yeah, I thought it was definitely a case where Gonzaga had USC outcoached, and then on top of that, it felt like Gonzaga kind of punched him in the mouth right in the beginning, and then USC just never responded. No physicality to it, just kind of, okay, more like a happy-to-be-there type thing. Like, they were happy to have made the Elite Eight, and it was just kind of done at that point. For Oregon State, I thought they showed a ton of fight. It was just they could not handle their defensive backboard. And for the first time, probably in weeks and weeks and weeks, Alatisha found athletes who could match him. You know, he was jumping over everybody for such a long time. And then in this game, finally there were some dudes who could kind of keep up with him. So he was not as big of an impact player in this one. You know, I thought the zone got him back into it, but the zone also kept him from handling their defensive backboard. So it was kind of a you know, die by fire thing. They needed it to get back into the game, but then, you know, it was kind of what ultimately killed them. But, I mean, incredible season, and to be, what was it, tied in that game with 3 minutes to go, 55-55. Incredible season. Incredible end of the season for them. They beat six straight teams who were KenPom top 35 teams. That's incredible. I don't know if you went back the last 3 or 4 years whether they have six wins over the top 35 in KenPom. So that was a huge run for that program.
Yeah, for sure. And in general, like we talked about, this was significant for the Pac-12. They needed to get some sort of momentum, getting real Larry Scott's one way. Making a great run in the NCAA tournaments another way. So just get a little respect on the West Coast. It was a very West Coast centric tournament. If, you know, like UCLA
is,
or Gonzaga.
Is a very West Coast centric tournament.
Oh, well, here, that leads to my question. So you're a full honk mode. It's awesome reading your tweets and stuff.
Yeah, I'm flying high.
You're flying high. I mean, obviously the crash and burn could be spectacular. We likely will be, but I want to know, I'm going to give you two scenarios.
Give them to me.
What would you rather have happen? One, on Saturday, Gonzaga just boat races UCLA, like a lot of people think. Two, UCLA, miracle win, like great shot at the end, whatever it is, and loses like a heartbreaker for the national championship in the championship game. Which would you rather have?
You got to go number two. I do like that you supplied me with the two options that are 100% it's one of those two, because there's no way, there's no actual way where UCLA wins the title here. So it will be one way. It'll either be disappointing or, wow, really disappointing. So I would have to go with number two, knocking off Gonzaga with, and I am not meaning to denigrate these lovely Bruins, but knocking off Gonzaga with this team would be such a ridiculous thing to do that I think we would all enjoy watching it. Like, I was watching Bomani Jones talk on Highly Questionable the last couple of times after the UCLA game, and just like the obvious disdain there is for this brand of basketball, like just slowing it down, mucking it up, just grinding the gears. Because the thing is, UCLA, they're playing pretty elite defense right now, but they really haven't all year. Like, this team is just kind of slowing it down, making it ugly, and so many people have such disdain for it that if they do that, like, if they turn the Gonzaga game into, like, a 65-62 just alleyway fight, like, just how many people will be so upset by that would be so joyous for me. So I think I got to go with that and then the loss to, like, Houston in the final. And the thing is, the loss to Houston or Baylor in the final, it wouldn't be close. It would be like they beat Gonzaga, and then they lose by 15 in the title game.
Oh.
That's the actual action.
It's good we got the torchbearer for the conference, UCLA, in the Final Four. We've never talked this much basketball. I think if say UCLA was the only team doing well, we probably wouldn't. You'd bring it up.
No, we wouldn't talk about it as much. I've got to be honest. I would probably bring it up at every conceivable opportunity, and this will not.
You could.
This won't be the last time I mention it on this show today. Like, I will bring it up several times, most likely.
Nice. All right. Well, we got that out of the way. Let's see. So, was it Saturday? The normal format for the Final Four, right? Saturday, Monday.
Yeah, Saturday. It'll be the evening game for UCLA and Gonzaga, and then Monday. Yeah.
All right. So we'll definitely check that out. We also, some little Pac-12 newsy stuff. We mentioned our friend.
The truth is, we all know Champagne Larry likes to roll large, right?
Larry Scott. He's out, right? As of a couple months from now. The search is going on, and according to John Wilner, he posted some information about what the Turnkey ZRG put on their website as far as what it was, their requirements would be. It seemed very open, like they weren't going to make a decision like, hey, we want to hire this guy and then just go that way. They were really going to try to keep their mind open, but from the description, it sounded like very anti Larry Scott, pretty much the opposite of that, which I think makes a lot of sense. He did post a couple of names. It looks like they haven't got, according to sources that Wilner's talked to, they haven't come down as any kind of finalists yet. They're still weeks away, but it's getting closer. And he gave four names of potential candidates. One is Randy Freer. He's a former Fox Network Group president who negotiated the company's Tier 1 media rights with the Pac-12. So he's the one that kind of fleeced the Pac-12 on that other end of it. And he also helped create the new Big East Conference with his role at Fox. Oliver Luck, former West Virginia AD. He's now NCAA Executive Vice President, and he has had runs in the NFL Europe and the XFL. Bill Moose, who played football at Washington State, was the athletic director there in Pullman and Eugene, and he's currently at Nebraska. And Gloria Navarez, she's a former Pac-12 senior associate commissioner who left in 2018 to take charge of the West Coast Conference. So that was kind of interesting. That his source said Turnkey's talking to a lot of people. The advice they're getting is emphasizing a lot of different things. I'm not sure they're going to find anyone who satisfies everyone. It's only going to happen quickly if they give up on the idea of the perfect person. So that's sort of what Wilner's been reporting on the Pac-12 commish. Any thoughts, David?
Freer sounds interesting to me. Somebody who's got the TV experience. It looks like he was also the CEO of Hulu for a while.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, and he just stepped down from that role. So that is interesting to me. Maybe he's got connections there. Oliver Luck, that's a name that's been bandied about, I think, since the very beginning of this search, and I think even prior to it, just from a fit perspective. I honestly, all I know about him is that he's talked of highly. Like, all I ever hear about him is, oh, he's a very smart guy and all that crap, but I have no idea. And then Bill Moos is really old. I mean, not to be ageist, but he's like 70. I don't know if that's a big factor if you want somebody who's going to be there for years and years and years. And then Gloria Navarez, I don't know anything about. But she's a current commissioner, so that's good, right? WCC.
You know what's bad?
What?
She worked for Larry Scott.
Yeah, we don't like that.
Yeah.
But she looks like she's been more involved in collegiate athletics for longer than maybe Larry was. So
yeah,
you know, it's not necessarily dispositive just being associated with that guy. So. Anyway, sounds like some interesting candidates. I'm interested in learning more about them. I will go on record again. I have no idea what makes a good commissioner. I know after watching Larry Scott what kind of makes a bad one, but that's more based on results. It's hard to really know based on resume which of these guys, because it's just such a... I think there are so many facets to the issues that the Pac-12 was faced with that... It's hard to really know. Yeah, I think you need somebody who's got some just innate flexibility and ability to kind of think through problems and do some pretty creative problem solving. Yeah. So I'm interested to see who emerges.
If she left the Pac-12 because she's like, this guy's incompetent, then I'd be more apt to want to hire her.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. No, I think that'd be a huge part of it.
Well, they're also, so it looked like things were going to wrap up a little earlier. And, you know, Wilner put in his like stock report that this is falling as far as a resolution. So he feels there's two paths here. One, the vetting process moves swiftly. The presidents will coalesce on one candidate and the search will conclude in the next 10 days or 2 weeks. And this scenario is considered highly unlikely. The vetting takes time, consensus is elusive, numerous candidates are evaluated and debated, and the process runs into late April or early May. This scenario is considered highly likely. So unless someone like jumps off the page, this might take a little longer than maybe we hoped.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah. I mean, just want to get... I think the important thing is Larry Scott's not going to be there. Was it Greg Byrne was a candidate before? I think he pulled his name. He said he wasn't going to be a candidate. Patrick Chung from Washington State, the athletic director there, was, I guess, being looked at for the vacant position at Kansas because that huge mess there with Les Miles. But he says he's not moving along. So that's good news for Washington State.
Yeah. Why would he move from Washington State to Kansas? That seems like that's a lateral move.
Yeah. I don't know. They might be making more money in the Big 12 or something.
Are they? You do have an elite. Much more money?
You have an elite basketball program.
Yeah, but you've got like an even worse football program, which is the real big ticket item for a athletic department.
Yeah, but they've had some success. I mean, certainly not the success Washington State's had recently, but
where is there Kansas? Was some. Is that in Topeka?
Lawrence, I believe.
Yeah, that's right, Lawrence. So, I mean, come on, Pullman's better than that.
yeah. So we'll see what happens there. I mean, it's good that he's staying around. He seems like a really sharp athletic director. So spring football stuff, Arizona State wrapped up. They're done.
I saw that they were trying to play that game concurrent with some NCAA tournament games. Did you get a chance to watch that spring game, Ryan?
No, I have not watched it. I've really not. Okay. I've not watched much spring football or talk. I mean, I've covered one USC practice. They're having one.
Are you
today,
doing okay? Are you handling this okay?
I just don't have the Pac-12 network, and I just don't have the energy to go sign up for Sling again to get it. I'm
are
just
you
sort
doing
of like,
okay? Like this is like a wellness check now.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm a little disillusioned, I guess. There's just maybe it's an over a.
The joy has gone out of you now.
Yeah. But it's funny that ASU's done. You know, they got it all done early. It's everyone's pretty positive coming out of spring football for ASU. So I think the expectations couldn't be a lot higher. You know, they got their full spring in, unlike before. We've been talking to some of the USC coaches, and they're just like really excited that they can actually have a full spring football. We talked to Todd Orlando this morning, the defensive coordinator, and he's like, you know, it's hard to install a culture in like 4 weeks of camp before a game when you're really getting ready for the game. You want to try to do that kind of stuff in the spring. So I think for all these Pac-12 programs, being able to get in a full spring is a big deal. And it looks like everything went well for Herm Edwards and ASU's spring ball.
That's wonderful. We love to hear it. We love to hear spring practice updates. They're so, I think, huge and important. Earth rattling, world changing.
Yeah. Football. Is UCLA? So we can watch the full practice, two of the three per week. So we can watch 10 of the 15.
Uh-huh.
No media availability. We get like players and coaches that they set the morning of practice. So like 8 a.m. or whatever, like the day of practice, we get to do a Zoom call with usually like coach and a player or something. And then you can watch practice. We can film like one period. But they're like, the only practice I went, the first one that we could go to, all the players were basically over 100 yards away. So it wasn't really that worth that much. And we are like up on it's the north side of Howard Jones Field where they practice, and it's the aquatic center. So we're like up on this wall, like 30 feet above the practice field. So that's kind of cool. It was a pretty good vantage point, but I don't know. It was definitely different. I just got an email from Chris Fetters. He said, outside of the second to last practice of the spring, which will be completely closed, every practice was open to the media. So that's good. They'll practice 4 days a week starting April 7th, and the spring game will be May 1st. And they're going to be able to talk to, he said, Coach Lake 4 times, and then the rest was split between coaches and players. So they're going to get some access in Washington, too. It sounds like, you know, and Arizona was letting people watch practice. That's kind of cool. What's the UCLA situation?
They're not starting until the end of April.
Wow. That's going to take a while. Okay.
Yeah. So we haven't gotten any of those details yet. I'm assuming some of it's going to be open. They've opened it pretty much all the years in the past for spring ball, but usually it's on the parking lot. So you can see the near field. The far field's a little bit dicier to get details. And then they've been, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure it'll be like a coach and a couple of players via Zoom would be my guess. Usually every day. I think they probably have 1 day a week where it's just a coach. And by just a coach, I do mean Chip Kelly, because he does not allow his assistants to talk. Despite the propaganda coming out of UCLA that they allow their assistants to talk, they do not. It's false. It's a false narrative. It'll be Chip Kelly. And then players. Probably like 2 players a day.
Okay. Well, it'll be something.
I'm sure everyone cares about the media coverage of spring practice.
Well, I mean, if you're a fan of, you know, Arizona, and you know that the, you know, last year they weren't allowed to see anything. We wouldn't even talk to the, you know, Kevin Sumlin wouldn't talk to anybody or whatever. It's better if you can know what's going on. Like for us, just being able to watch again, and you're not relying on what the coaches say as far as like, oh, that guy's looking good or whatever. Like you can actually go out and see it yourself. I there's something to be said for that. And so for the fans that are kind of, you know, the diehard fans that want to know what's going on, and the person you trust that's covering the team gets to watch it. It definitely helps.
It matters.
It matters.
Spring ball matters.
Yeah. Starting that late though, David, is there concerns that, you know, you get a spring ball injury and it impacts the season?
I'm sure there are. Yes. That's been a theory for a long time with why a lot of coaches do it earlier, do it in February or March. So, yeah, I mean, it's definitely a worry if you get an ACL tear or even just a minor tear of some ligament, that the recovery time will put you out for the beginning of the season or at the very least fall camp. So, I'm sure that drawback factored in. But I think on the other side, it'll be nicer to get some of the transfers who otherwise would have been coming in spring quarter to be there for the entirety of spring ball. Because if you remember in the past, they were doing it kind of split. So it would be the end part of winter quarter where some of the transfers or incoming freshmen wouldn't be in yet, who wouldn't get the first half of spring ball, and then they would be there for the second half. This way they'll get all, whatever, 15 practices they end up doing. So I guess that's a positive. But yeah, I would say the injury concern would be, you know, a significant drawback for doing it this late.
Yeah. Hopefully, obviously, you hope no one gets injured, but there's advantages to maybe you have, you know, there's more you can do. And, you know, as, you know, LA and, California open up more later on, you can maybe do a little bit more in your spring football practices. But yes, you're getting closer to the season. You know, Arizona State and Arizona, they get it done early usually because of the heat. But there's definitely an advantage there. You might not get guys available that were injured in the end of the season, too. So, I mean, sort of like pick your poison where you want to go.
Right.
I don't know if you checked out Wilner's thing about he did an investigation on the future of the Pac-12 networks because, there was those furloughs, there was layoffs, didn't have, fall games and football, for football. So an industry source he talked to said the conference needs to rethink everything it does. Its position has weakened in the last 2 years. The whole notion of the Pac-12 networks has to go. And the subscriber data is just bad. It's only 14.8 million subscribers now, according to estimates by S&P Global Market Intelligence. And that's a 17% drop over the past 2 years. The Big Ten and SEC networks have over 50 million. He said the Pursuit Channel has 35 million. So, what, less than half of what the Pursuit Channel gets. And he broke it down by region as well. So the national channel gets 14.8 million, but all those, the regional networks, the LA one has the most, 3 million, then 2.1 million for the Bay Area, 1.1 for Washington, 1.0 million for the Mountain region, 0.07 million for Arizona, and 0.7 million and 0.6 million for Oregon. And low subscriber fees for all of those. So you got to rethink it. I mean, the very least is get rid of the regional ones, right? Like that's like the write that on the whiteboard in permanent marker and then go from there, I would assume.
Yeah, I think probably smartly they're going to wait to make those sorts of decisions until they have a new commissioner in place, or they should, to see what he wants or he or she wants to do with all of that. Because I don't know, and I can't imagine it matters, but when they do go to negotiate some new TV rights deal with the destruction of the network, whether they'll have additional leverage if they've still got all those weird little networks available or if they won't. So I think all those decisions for later, but yeah, I mean, obviously they can't continue with this format, this model. It doesn't work. The inventory itself is useless, as anyone could have told them. And that's what we talked about a bunch on this show, just, whether you want it to be or not, the sports that are minor because nobody watches them or cares about them. And I don't mean nobody, but I do mean like very few people care about them. And it's hard to train people to care about something new. I was thinking about this recently, but like the things I care about sports wise are all things I started to care about when I was still like, not even having like a fully formed brain. I don't care about new things. Like, I've watched, a dark commentary, I guess, on my general sexism. I've watched women's basketball recently. I've watched, the women's NCAA tournament. And it's really good basketball. Like, I don't know if you've watched it at all, but it's, like, really good basketball. But I just don't care. Like, I just don't care because I didn't watch it a lot when I was, like, and I think that's part of it, is I didn't watch it a lot when I was in my formative sports years. Like, the same way, like, if I watch soccer, I don't care. Like, I do not care at all about watching the U.S. team. It's like, oh, okay, that's a nice little novelty. but I can't sit around caring about it. And I've tried to get into the Premier League a few times, and I'm just like, I know soccer. Like, I played it for a number of years, but I never watched it, so I just don't care about this. And I think trying to train people to care about water polo or, you know, collegiate tennis or, you know, all the number of things that are on there, even collegiate baseball, which I think has, you know, maybe a bigger in with people because they like professional baseball, getting people to care about it at that level as adults, because that's mainly the people who are watching their TV, I think is pretty close to an impossibility. You got to start people young caring about any of this stuff. Yeah, anyway, I think those networks, built as they are, largely on lesser sports, I shouldn't say lesser sports, but sports that fewer people care about, they're just not, they were never going to get off the ground.
Yeah, you know, I've heard that. I've not watched any, you know, full disclosure, any of the, you know, women's NCAA basketball tournament.
It's really good. It's like really good basketball.
Really good things. Yeah,
it's really good basketball. Like if you appreciate basketball on like an aesthetic level, it's really good. It's just it's a lack of personal investment, and I don't think it's. I mean, because I used to watch a lot of tennis early on in college, so I can get really into professional tennis, like men's and women's. Like if I sit around and watch that for a while, I'll get super into it again. So I don't think it's like, I mean, I'm sure there's some latent sexism in there too, but like, I don't think it's purely sexism. I think it's that I never got into it at a young enough age. And so it's just like, it's kind of like an aesthetic novelty. I can appreciate the game on a certain level, but I don't have investment in it. The same way, like I never watched a ton of hockey. So like a really good hockey game, yeah, I can sit there and watch it, but I could never get invested in it ever. It's just one of those things, I think.
I never got into hockey until I started playing like the Sega video game that had all the players' names on it in college. That was like 93 or so, whatever, NHL 93 back in the day. That was good. But I never got into soccer. I played the soccer video game and I would just want to like take the guy and run with the ball. And my friend's like, no, you got to pass around. I'm like, screw that. I'm like, I'm not passing backwards. That's
what a very USC attitude. You just want to take the ball and run with it, not share.
Not share. No, I don't want to share. Nice. Oh, I have one other little piece of news. I don't know if it's news, but it's kind of like the last thing we're going to talk about. Did you see the Pac-12 sent out this email? This was a couple days ago. Pac-12 Network secures international distribution for Pac-12 Insider with launch on a new UK-based streaming platform, Sports Tribal TV.
What did he just say to me?
The headline is, okay, I'll read you the first paragraph. San Francisco, Pac-12 Network has announced the launch of Pac-12 Insider on its first international platform, Sports Tribal, extending its reach to the UK. Pac-12 Insider is the first and only college sports channel on the new Sports Tribal platform, bringing the best of Pac-12 sports to an even greater number of fans. Like, literally, you're putting it on a brand new streaming service across the pond where college sports basically doesn't exist. That's what we're doing.
It's a final gift from Larry Scott. It's beautiful.
I mean, there should be someone at the Pac-12 that says, all right, we did this. We're not going to tell anybody we did this. This doesn't matter.
Yeah, they don't. I don't know. Whatever the self-edit button is, they just don't really have it over there. They've sent out some weird press releases. Good for them. Maybe they build an audience out there.
What? No, but like people, like you meet people from like France, and they're like, "You play sports in college?" And it's like, no, I mean, like they don't care. Like their best players go play professional right away. You know, there's no like college soccer. Like soccer's huge, right? They're not playing like college soccer. They go to the professional leagues. One of the quotes is, Sports Tribal is a perfect fit for Pac-12 Insider. We are excited to provide some of the best Pac-12 network content to fans across the pond, said Pac-12 Network Vice President of Distribution, Henry Watson. They have a Vice President of Distribution. You should be fired just because they're terrible at that. With so many college sports fans feeling energized by March Madness, the timing couldn't be better to increase the reach and accessibility of our Pac-12 content to an even greater international audience. it's like, what? Like, how about DirecTV, dude? Like there should be some moratorium on, if you're getting a streaming service that no one in the United States can even get, like, unless it helps someone in the Pac-12 footprint get the Pac-12 network, then you can't announce it. I think that's what the rule should be.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
So dumb. So dumb. All right. I just wanted to leave on that one. Okay. Do you have anything else, or should we take a little break and move on to questions?
No. I've got nothing else except to say that UCLA made the Final Four.
You didn't bring it up for the rest of my newsy rant stuff.
That's because you actually put me to sleep. You actually did. I went to sleep sometime in the middle of discussing like Pac-12 subscribers.
You know what we forgot to do? I forgot to do the whole like rest of the intro because we just like jumped in.
Oh, wow. Intro us. Do people know what they're listening to?
You're listening to the Podcast of Champions. But just if you want to email us, because we're going to read some emails now, you can email pac12podcast@gmail.com. We actually have a couple of voicemails. If you want to leave us a text message, I think we might have one of those too. The same number, 424-532-0678. You can tweet us at Pac-12Podcast. The website is pac12podcast.com. Reddit.com/r/podcastofchampions if you like to get in on the Reddits. And Apple Podcasting app. If you got that on your phone, you got it on your iPad or something, you got to follow us. It's now following. It's not subscribing anymore, David. Do you know that? It's follow.
Okay.
And rate us. 5 stars would be awesome. We love that stuff. And I was going to say, the why I remembered this was because I was going to say, that stuff that puts you to sleep, David, so when someone leaves us a review and they say, and they talk a little bit about Pac-12 football, that's usually me at the top of the show, like reading some news that you don't care about.
Yeah, but I feel like they don't care. I feel like they don't care about it. I feel like they're aligned with me on this. They're not listening to this for a Pac-12 football talk, are they?
There's plenty of people that would like to hear some Pac-12 football.
Oh, jeez.
And they just don't get it.
Yeah. Well, we do have a few reviews. Are you ready for them?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, this is from Listen McListener, 5-star review. David Woods, please read this review. Okay. Since you guys will read any and every 5-star review, David Woods, read this review credited to free to rightfully earn all 5 stars. Read it in any manner that resembles singing, and you will be rewarded with another 5-star review next week by either myself or hopefully that weird Stanford Zodiac killer guy. All right now. Okay, so these are the lyrics to All Right Now.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, let me see if I can get the tune in my head real quick. All right. There she stood in the street, smiling from her head to her feet. I said, hey, what is this now, baby? Maybe she's in need of a kiss. I said, hey, what's your name, baby? Maybe we can see things the same. Now don't you wait or hesitate, let's move before they raise the parking rate. All right now, baby, it's a all right now. All right now, baby, it's a all right now. I took her home.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I got more to go, dude. I took her home to my place, watching every move on her face. She said, look, what's your game, baby? Are you trying to put me in shame? I said, slow, don't go so fast. Don't you think that love can last? She said, love, Lord above, now you're trying to trick me in love. All right now, baby, it's all right now. 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 All right, so that's the song.
Well done.
I thought I nailed it.
Okay. Right. Very, very good.
I thought I nailed it.
I mean, I couldn't do that. Like, great. I mean, that was a long review. We appreciate that.
Well, we got more to read here. Can anyone think of another podcast that would do this crap? I think not. Hence, 5 stars. Yours truly, Listener McListener.
Nice.
Then we've got DJ Alexander. The beard and the guy who got lucky on Price is Right, I'm guessing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Come for the football, stay for the, well, just about everything else. And then nice. 503, 5-star review, and it's just 5 stars as the subject line and the body of the message. Love it.
Nice. It's funny, I like a friend of mine that was like, wait, you do this, I'm trying to explain the podcast. And so I'm like, well, let me read you some of the reviews and you'll get a feel. The one where they called me like a Romney Republican and you were some kind of communist or something. I read that and they're like, wait, you guys talk about sports? I'm like, yeah, kind of.
Sometimes.
And yeah, they played it on their iPhone and they got in their car like later on and like just like it was blaring. They forgot that they were listening to it and they're like, I thought you were in the car. And I was like, oh no. So then they listened to it a while. They're like, you guys talk about a lot of weird stuff. I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, that's what we do.
We do. All right. Oh, that was all the reviews. Well, thank you for the reviews. Those are awesome. And let's take a quick break and we'll come back and answer some questions.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Introducing the two-way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the two-way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the two-way for yourself at newbalance.com.
Hey, we're back. It's all right now.
It's so, all right now.
Yeah.
We're not going to get murdered by the Zodiac Killer now.
No. Yeah. He was not letting that go, by the way. So I'm glad. That was a great method to deliver it, to get you to do it, right? Like, put it in a 5-star review.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Luckily, I had the tune in my brain, and it was helpful to see the lyrics.
Yes. No, I think that helps. I mean, he seemed pretty smart for a Stanford guy, right? So that's good, a way to do it. It only took him like 3 months to figure out, hey, put it in a review and we'll read it.
Exactly. That's all we
I
need.
Guess I could have put it in an email too, but do you want to do the voicemails first and get to the emails? How would you like to do this?
I'm open to whichever format makes you the happiest because I am in the business of making you happy, sir.
That's a great business. I love it. Well, let's play one of the voicemails. Here we go.
What's up, guys? This is Evan from Tempe. Just thinking about something you guys said a while back. Ryan said all USC fans should want USC to hire Luke Fickell, and David said that all non-USC Pac-12 fans shouldn't want USC to hire Luke Fickell, and they shouldn't want him to go there because that could be bad news for them. And I agree with that. And so I was just thinking, you know, do you think that he'd be the best coach in the Pac-12, just in general? And then if so, is that even saying that much? Because, you know, to me, the Pac-12 is a pretty weak coach conference. I mean, the only guys I think you have that aren't bad or, you know, don't have any kind of question marks next to them are, I guess, maybe Sean Whittingham. Might be leaving out somebody. I don't think I am, though. I mean, and no offense, like Jimmy Wade or like Carl Durrell, because I mean they haven't really had a chance to prove themselves. But I'm just saying, like the only proven guys I think would probably be Shaw and Whittingham. So, how do you just get your thoughts on how Luke Fickell would place in the Pac-12, and you know what he could mean to the Pac-12? That'd be great. So, I appreciate you guys. Thank you.
Yeah, great question. I think you're pretty dead on in your assessment of the Pac-12 current coaching landscape. I think you've got a lot of unproven or proven above average. And I think that's probably fair, just more or less across the board. With Luke Fickell, I think he's legitimately a good to great coach. He has, per SRS, his last two seasons are two of the best Cincinnati seasons of all time. Generally, when you're looking at elite coaches, or coaches generally, you want to compare them to what people have been able to do with their school historically. And so Luke Fickell, when you're trying to assess him, you don't want to just do it in a vacuum or compare him to whatever, something somebody's doing at Alabama or something somebody's doing at LSU. You want to compare him to, okay, what do guys do at Cincinnati? What is typical for that job? And what he's doing is atypical. The last guy to have similar success there was Brian Kelly, and before that, nobody. It's basically him and Brian Kelly at the top of the board. So I think Luke Fickell is an obvious, potentially elite guy. And I think once he enters whatever league he's going to be in, he's going to be one of the top guys in that league. In the Pac-12, I think he would, from day one, be the best coach and the most proven coach wherever he lands.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't seen him at the Power 5 level, but just, you know, from some of the stuff I've read about him and you know, what I've seen from Cincinnati, I think he would be an excellent coach in the Pac-12 and, you know, could certainly do some great things at USC. So I think there's going to be a lot of good candidates if they end up making a move. But, I mean, I think his name is going to come up quite a bit, you know, because he's such a great coach, like David was saying, but also because Mike Bone hired him, and he's now the athletic director at USC. Yeah. So he hired him in Cincinnati.
Just so people have some context here, just from like a pure record perspective, here's what he has done as a head coach. 2017, he's hired at Cincinnati, and he goes 4-8. The next year, he goes 11-2. The year after that, he goes 11-3. And the year after that, this year, he went 9-1, truly elite. From an SRS standpoint, which is basically just a simple advanced rating system, he was a negative 10 in year one, which is basically he was 10 points worse than like a just purely average team. So if you played a purely average team on a neutral field, he would be expected to lose by 10. That's really bad. By year two, he was a 7 points above average. By year three, nearly 11. And now in year four, he was a 15. Just the trajectory that you're looking at there is... that is the mark of an elite coach, like somebody who can immediately turn something around like that and then have it just trending constantly upward. That's the kind of thing that would be scary at a school like USC, where the baseline talent level will never allow you to have a season like that 2017 Cincinnati year. Like when you start at where he is right now, basically at Cincinnati, like with that quality in terms of advanced stats, the cap on that is there really is no cap. Like he could have an amazing run wherever he lands. But at USC with the natural advantages there, there's really no limit to the potential.
Well, thanks for the question, Evan. Dave, you want to, maybe we'll read a couple of emails and I'll go back to the voicemail. Do you want to start with John and Bray, or you want me to?
Sure. I'll handle that. Okay. So that's the new POC format.
Yes.
Okay. Dear Ryan and Dave, it's been a while since I've written, and I must say I like the pivot to a more basketball-focused podcast with a little bit of talk about punting. With four Pac-12 teams in the Sweet 16, it's clear that Champaign Larry's goal to have the Pac-12 be more like the Big East is finally being realized. Deep down, this has always been a basketball conference. It's been fun to see the talking hair-dyed heads on ESPN, TBS, and CBS backpedal and make excuses for the failings of their beloved Midwest basketball. They just can't resist saying things like, Mick Cronin has struggled to find physical, tough-minded players on the West Coast, or run a feature that legendary coach John Wooden is actually from Indiana, which somehow proves this is where the best basketball is played in 2020. And finally, ESPN reseeding the Sweet 16 and placing the four Pac-12 schools at 12, 13, 14, and 15... behind Oral Roberts and only ahead of Creighton. The only way to change this perception is to have a Pac-12 team win this thing. Oh, but wait, two Pac-12 teams are playing each other in the Sweet 16 because the committee figured there is no way they both would make it this far. But this happens all the time, right? Nope, it's only happened one other time in history. Nice. In keeping with the new, and that was so stupid because all they had to do was put Oregon over on the other side of the bracket because there was nobody in that one, and move Florida over as the 7 seed to USC's bracket. So stupid. Yeah. And it was all to accommodate, I think at some level, BYU because they didn't want to play on Sundays. Whatever. Just whatever. In keeping with the new Podcast of Champions format, I have a couple of questions. One, let's say the new commissioner decides to see to fruition Champaign-Larry's plan to turn the Pac-12 into a 16-team basketball-only conference. Which four schools in the West would you add? Well, basketball-only opens some possibilities.
Gonzaga.
But the thing with Gonzaga, and there's so many people like situated in Eastern Washington that are spitting mad that we're not calling them Gonzaga. So many people. Because that's how you're apparently supposed to pronounce it. But I'm going to stick with my dude, the Italian guy named Gonzaga, and continue calling them Gonzaga. But
I didn't realize that.
It's Gonzaga. That's why they're the Zags, not the Zogs. They'll tell you that in like a very pretentious Eastern Washington accent. It's not a pretentious accent. They just like to flatten their A's. Which schools in the West would you add? I don't know, but would the Pac-12 ever add a school with a decently important religious affiliation?
It didn't seem like it. It would have to be like
now they're Jesuit, so like Jesuits bordering on like whatever, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's not like BYU, right? It's not that.
Yeah, I don't know that it's like a pronounced part of like, I don't know. I honestly don't know much about it as an institution, but I don't know how much of it is actually a day-to-day important thing.
But like in real life, you're not adding basketball schools. Like they would have to bring football revenue.
Yeah, so let's say, but like for the intents and purposes, for this purpose, I should say. So Gonzaga, fine. San Diego State?
I think so. They're the first one that came to mind.
And then West Coast basketball. You probably got to go, maybe the final resurgence of USF basketball. You know, bring them back from the Bill Russell
days. Ooh, I like that.
That'd be kind of nifty.
And then would you do BYU? It's like
throw BYU in there. You know, that's probably the four best-ish teams in the in the West that aren't in the Pac-12.
Nice.
I don't think we're forgetting anybody. And then, two, does it bother you that punters wear football pants that look like shorts? And if one of those punters from Australia runs outside the tackle box to kick the ball, shouldn't the defense be allowed to cream the guy?
I think they can, right?
Yeah, I think they can. I think it's a live person when they're outside of
the... I think once you break you have that little pocket area...
Yeah, that's why they're always so close to getting drilled when they go out that way.
Yeah, I think you're allowed to.
I think so, too. And the football pants that look like shorts have never really bothered me.
No, I'm not a big, uniform guy. Like, if it's something...
I just don't care.
Some people are like, can you believe they're wearing those socks? I'm like, I didn't even know they were wearing socks. Okay, that's fine. If it's something huge, like, okay, that fullback from 1987 is wearing a neck roll, like, okay, I noticed...
Or like when they're playing basketball and they're asking like what kind of shoes are they wearing, and I'm like, I don't know and I don't care.
The what shoe a dude was wearing has never the only time I've ever noticed or cared was when like Zion blew his tire out. Was it Nike he was wearing? And like, did you remember that when he was in, I think it was at Duke or something, and he...
No, I care about shoes even less than you do, apparently.
He cut, made a cut or something, and just basically the sole of his shoe, blew out. Like, he came out of his shoe, and it was, the worst, marketing. You can Google that one and check it out, but it was, I think it was when he was at Duke. So that was the only time I ever, he wore this kind of shoe, and it sucked. It broke while he's playing. This one's from Matthew from Mountain View. NCAA play-in game performance and Pac-12 mascots. Not again. Apparently again. Hello, Dave. Time for Ryan to take a bathroom break. I have a theory as to why the at-large play-in winners, such as UCLA this year, tend to overperform in the main bracket. Consider the following. The committee does an imperfect job of seeding teams, either by performance, for example, record, NET rating, or by predictive metrics like KenPom ratings. Two, Even if the committee did a perfect job based on available data, they would still be at a disadvantage because 25 to 30 games just aren't enough to definitively evaluate most teams' true talent level. Think about some of the past teams that were ranked highly in the preseason, underperformed during the regular season, then went on a run to the Final Four, like Kentucky with Julius Randle in 2014, preseason number one, went 24-10, got an 8 seed, and then turned it on and went all the way to the championship game. Therefore, you can think of half the teams being overseeded and half being underseeded. The trick is figuring out which teams are which. Conveniently, we get an extra data point on the play-in teams because they play each other right before the tournament. So basically, we can assume that whichever team wins the play-in game was underseeded and therefore far more likely to overperform in the main bracket. For net results, historically, 11 seeds win their first round game 33% of the time. 12 seeds are even worse, while the play-in winners pull off the upset 45% of the time. Thoughts?
Interesting. I think it certainly sounds good. I think it's a little too neat. It works as well as any other explanation. I've always just kind of bought the it's easier to play that game once you've built up a little bit of juice after winning that play-in game against a similarly situated opponent, somebody who's at the same-ish level as you, because I think that's generally going to be a pretty competitive game. So you've played something that can have tournament energy. Like the thing with UCLA this year is playing Michigan State in that play-in game, it really was, like, if you watch that game, it had a real NCAA tournament feel to it. Like, it felt like tournament-level basketball. And I think it maybe prepares teams a little bit better than even a conference tournament does, and especially a conference tournament that ended, you know, 5 or 6 days before the tournament. Kind of gets them in that, you know, style of play, that style of thinking about the game, if they win. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how much it plays into the underseeding, overseeding thing, because I think that basketball, it's just you don't have enough data points at any one point to truly prove the quality of a team, and I think just one additional one at that point isn't that significant. I think it's more about what the level of a game between two play-in teams that really want to make the tournament, what that then gives the team that wins in terms of confidence, whatever, in terms of experience, winning a tournament basketball game, the things you have to do, the commitment you have to show, like all that kind of stuff. I think maybe that is more significant, but certainly an interesting theory.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting theory. I think with athletics, but team sports, there's so many variables, right? I mean, you got all these variables, all these equations, you're trying to figure out, well, what is this going to mean? It just doesn't mean the same thing all the time. There's so many factors, there's so many, you know, initial conditions that you have to take into consideration. When Oregon played Iowa, well, were they going to be rusty or were they going to be rested? And so Oregon wins, they're like, Oregon was rested. That's why they won. If they lost, they'd went with Oregon was rusty. You know, it could go either way. And, you know, we see this in the NFL playoffs, the team that gets a bye, sometimes they have that week off. Well, they rested their injuries. They looked awesome. Or, man, they look like they haven't played for 2 weeks. And I think that same team, that same Oregon team, if you played the tournament a month from now in the exact same scenario, they might not play as well as they did. I think there's so many factors at play. The extra data point, I don't think underseeded, overseeded, a lot of basketball games are coin flips anyway, right? Like, I don't think just because you won the playing game, you are most likely the underseeded team. Maybe you were, probably better than 50% chance, but it's not like 100% of those teams that win are going to be the underseeded team. So there's just, I mean, it's basketball, like so many things can happen and just, you know, great players can play poorly. It happens all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. And especially in kind of the weird, formats and settings of, NCAA tournament, you know, in a particular game, you might be playing in a stadium, like a huge football stadium, or in a different place that you're not familiar with the rims, and like you'll see teams that shoot it really well, suddenly everything's hitting back iron because they're just not used to shooting with that backdrop or whatever. I mean, it's just,
yeah.
But it's like any sport. A single data point of any sport is tough. I think football is one where I think just because so many different things are happening, it tends to bear out that the best teams are usually the ones that win. It does seem like it's a little bit less upset prone than basketball or baseball, maybe a little bit lower variance. But basketball, it's just, you know, and a lot of it is like very much matchups, you know, can just be a weird thing. So, yeah, I don't really buy the underseeding, overseeding thing really ever. I think it's just a matter of, like, honestly, I thought the seeding was generally pretty good in this one. I think the Pac-12 teams were just generally better at the end of the season than they looked at the beginning for a lot of different reasons. But the committee couldn't, I mean, they had to make decisions based off resume, so I completely understand the way they seeded everything. Just, you know, kind of one of those weird things. The NCAA tournament, I think it's, why it's so exciting at a certain level is because of all the kind of weird things that can happen, like UCLA team that lost, you know, two of its three best players probably making this kind of run. It's just one of those weird things.
And, you know, we look at these games, especially the one-and-done ones, as like absolutes. Like, would you say Oregon State, USC, and UCLA are, you know, in the top eight in the country because they made the Elite Eight? Like, I probably not. Like, not maybe one of them. I don't think all three of them would be. But we look at these absolutes. Like, oh, they made a run, and they're in there. I mean, you watch the seven-game series that you have for the NBA would be, you know, the most similar to this. You know, one team wins by 30, and then they lose by 25 the next game. It's like, that's the exact same team 2 days later. You know?
Yeah.
Like, what? Maybe on the same court.
Yeah, no, exactly.
All right. He also said, as for the Pac-12 mascots, here it comes. Which of the actual real-life mascots would win in a fight? I don't mean bears with laser eyes, magical creatures, etc. I'm talking about Oski. Yeah, Oski, sorry. Joe Bruin, Puddles, the tree, and the rest. Give your best or worst shot. Keep up the good basketball work. Matthew from Mountain View.
So what you're really asking me is which character in a big costume that's most likely just like the tallest or shortest kid in band is the one who is going to win this fight?
Yeah, I think that's what we're...
Got to go with the drunk person in the tree, right?
I would think that drunk tree dude is... He gives no shits, right? Like, he would take a few punches and roll around the dirt with you, knee in the nuts. Like, I think he would be the one that would be the toughest to fight. I just, he would be the wild card to me. So I would agree with you.
Yeah. I've got further thoughts.
Puddles, I think, a lot of TV time. I think that's probably like a prime role. Like, that's like a prime job. Like, that's not like the drunkest, craziest dude in the Stanford band. That's like, they're, you know, they have tryouts and it's an honor to be Puddles. Like, you're probably getting like a trust fund dude running Puddles. So I think Puddles would probably get his ass kicked.
I mean, the dude whoever it is, the what is it? The like drum leader or whatever for USC? Who does the Tommy Trojan thing?
So if you're going to say, the person with the sword leading the band.
It was a girl last time, right?
Yeah, she's a bigger girl. She's like 6 feet tall, you know. But like,
well, what I'm really saying is that person has a sword.
They have a sword, so that would be an advantage. And she is not a small person. Not like she's fat or something.
I don't care. Like, if it's a 5 foot tall person with a sword, that probably kicks the hell out of any of these people.
If we're talking
a battle to the death, I mean, that sword can stab fields. So I'm sure it can stab people.
Yeah. So if you're talking about her, I would put her near the top of the list for sure, just having a weapon where others don't.
List no matter what. She has a weapon. None of these other ones have weapons.
The cartoon, if you're talking about the cartoon dude at the basketball thing with a big smile on his face, I think...
Well, he gets lumped in with all the other ones.
Yeah, he would get lumped in with all the other ones. But yeah, having the sword, I think that's a big one. Is there any other? Do we have any other weapons for the? Probably not.
I don't know who else would be a weapon. Maybe ASU. Do they have a pitchfork?
Yes.
But is it like a real pitchfork, really, or is it a foam thing?
I don't know if it's a real pitchfork. That's a good point.
All right, hang on. ASU mascot. I need an image.
I always remember that dude as being like, because he doesn't have like a puffy costume. He's got like a.
He's wearing like a more football uniform, basically.
He's what?
He's wearing a football uniform, basically.
Is that what it is? Like he puts a uniform on over it.
You know what? That thing looks real, or it looks like, I don't know. It's hard to tell from images. Okay, so I'm going to say it's between the Sun Devil person and the person with the sword.
The drum leader, like the USC drum leader. Yeah, fine. If it's a real like trident kind of thing, pitchfork deal, there's some you got some range on that as far as like you can throw it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, so that would be a good one.
Now I think a sword is a more practical weapon that people are probably more likely to be trained in its use, at least to an extent. Like we've all cut things with a knife. Like we get it. Like it might be hard to intuitively know how to use a pitchfork or throw it. So
true.
Or a trident. Whatever you want to call it. So maybe there's an advantage there for the person wielding the sword. I think I'm going to go sword. I'm going to go USC there.
Of the puffy costume folks, just like the cowl, like I don't know. Like there's like a softness sort of there to me. I already gave you my thoughts on Puddles. We both agree on the tree. What about Joe Bruin? Is it going to be a tough guy in there?
No, the same softness thing that's going on with Cal.
Okay.
I think it's because we all get like teddy bear vibes from it, you know?
Yeah. I don't think Washington has one. I don't think Washington State has one. Does Utah?
I have no idea.
Now, if they had like a Ute with a bow and arrow or something, that'd be...
Let me see if I can pull up a mascot image for Utah. There's something called a swoop. It's like an eagle, it looks like.
Okay.
I don't know, he looks kind of badass. Nice. He rides a motorcycle.
Oh, I mean, transportation.
That's pretty big.
Puddles does that sometimes too, I think. If you went with like the Tommy Trojan for USC, he had a horse. There's something there too. A sword and a horse.
I mean, Washington has an actual husky.
Right, but that we're not doing these have to be like, oh, maybe, well.
Well, all right, so Washington he says State doesn't
need bears.
Washington
he State said no bears, so no huskies.
Washington State has Butch T. Cougar.
It's a puffy thing, right?
Yeah, I would say he looks pretty soft too. He's okay. Got like kind of a softy smile to him. Looks like a little baby cougar because he's only got two teeth on the bottom. Even if that's correct, I think you got to go with more teeth.
What about the beaver mascot? That's like with the big buck teeth one.
Yeah, there's no way. That's not very scary in any way.
No, and I feel like that one would topple over a little bit. Just doesn't seem super balanced.
Yeah, no, there's no way.
All right, so
we're going to ASU versus USC.
All right, sounds good. Well, thank you, Matthew, for that one. I'll play you a second voicemail, and then we can you can do the next one. Here's the voicemail.
Hey guys, what's up? It's Perk. My question is for Ryan. I was wondering, with USC making a deep tournament run this year for their first Sweet 16 in a while, I was wondering if you see USC dedicating more time and money to the program, especially with their AD coming from Cincinnati. I've had a pretty solid basketball tradition there. Also, I've always viewed USC as a basketball as a program that should be a lot better at basketball, but just doesn't seem to care and has the potential to be a very good program. And I was wondering if you thought that as well. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Perk. Just from when I was in college, Harold Miner was there, and there was some excitement. There's always been a little bit of excitement, and then it just sort of goes away. They might get a one-and-done guy, and they just don't do that much with it. This was the first year that they actually, you know, made a run with a lottery pick kind of guy. They don't get them all the time, but when they do, they sort of, like, kind of underperform. They have a – it's sort of like the Kings in Los Angeles. Like, they have, like, kind of a passionate fan base, but it's not as big as other – now, the Kings fan base is bigger. And, you know, similar, like, with – I think they care about USC basketball. UCLA people care about UCLA football, but like you're kind of bread is buttered with the, you know, the football or basketball team on the other side. I do believe Mike Bone, the new athletic director, really cares. I mean, you know, I was covering a basketball game when he first got hired. He normally sits like mid court. He's like into the game. He's cheer. Like he's really into the basketball, and he sat courtside once, and when I first met him, I introduced myself to him, and he's like, come sit down with me. So I'm sitting down courtside with him, and he's asking me all these questions. Good thing I, you know, knew something about the basketball program, but he was asking all these different guys. So he definitely cares, for sure. And you know, they're recruiting well. I don't, you know if Andy Enfield's like some kind of elite coach, but they made an elite run this year. We'll see if that was that all talent or was that, you know, I don't know. I mean, you got to give them some credit. They did some good things, but I do think they care. It'll be curious to see if they keep going forward and trying to build on that, or if it's like another 20 years before they make an Elite Eight again.
Yeah. This was very literally, I would say their best season of all time. And I could be wrong. I don't think they won the conference and they made it to the Elite Eight. Yeah, I mean, I think the thing is with, and I think the reverse is true of UCLA in football, though even UCLA in football is a much better tradition than USC in basketball. But I think that the truth is there's nothing precluding both LA schools from being very good at both sports, men's basketball and football. I think for USC it largely has been. Maybe at some level a lack of interest. I think it was also just, you know, that is a football school, and that's their priority first and foremost. And it's just always been that way. But they've had some runs, I would say, recently more than any other time. I mean, I would say as relatively irrelevant as it might feel on the national stage, the last 20 years have probably been the best 20 years for USC basketball ever. Because you've had this Enfield run, but Tim Floyd had some good years. Henry Bibby had some good years. I guess go 25 years. So there's, you know, I mean, I think they are trying to do a little bit more there. It's hard. I mean, there's... In the Pac-12, there is a pecking order, and it's, you know, you've got two elite or near elite programs in US or in Arizona and UCLA, and then you've got Oregon that has been very good for some time now. You've got Stanford and Cal that actually have decent basketball traditions. So, you know, USC is not in the top tier even within the league. So it just it's a different deal, but certainly, I mean, it's an LA school with an athletic pedigree. If they showed a lot of interest and really focused on it, and you know, I'm sure they could win at an even higher level than they are right now.
Yeah,
Andy Enfield is not a good coach, though. That is false.
Nice because I don't know enough.
He's a good accumulator of talent. I don't think he's a horrible coach, but he's not good. A good coach with that team, I mean, they might still lose to Gonzaga, but they don't just get punched in the mouth and fall apart. I think that team could have just run away with the conference in a way that they didn't. I mean, Evan Mobley is a freak. I mean, it was a fine job this year. I just think if you had a truly elite coach, they might still be playing right now. Okay.
It would have been tough to beat Gonzaga, but the way they played wasn't even close.
The way they showed up to that game, they had no chance. And with the talent on that team, they should have had a chance. They were beaten from the jump. All right. This is from Hifleday, I think.
Ooh, yes.
Garu Dasana. This is an asymmetric position in yoga in which one leg, say the right, is crossed over the left, while the arm is on the opposite side, say the left, is while the arm on the opposite side, say the left, is crossed over the right, and the palms are pressed together. It looks hard to stand that way. All right.
He must like yoga.
Yeah, I'm guessing so. Yeah. COVID created a lot of disruptions to the recruitment process for the 2021 cycle, and it looks like the beginning of the 2022 cycle is significantly affected as well, with a lot of the typical steps like camps, official visits, and in-person meetings suspended. Different schools have adapted to this in different ways, and it'll probably be some time before we can fully evaluate the effectiveness of those various strategies. My question is separate from that, though. I'd like to know if you boys think the baseline appeal of any school has been hurt or helped by the pandemic prior to the choices that staffs have made to deal with it. A couple of early predictions don't seem to have proven true, for example, that kids would want to hunker down close to home, or that lack of visits to more prestigious schools would be less impactful to them. A lot of fan bases who had disappointing cycles last time and have started off slowly this year have blamed the pandemic, but I suspect that everybody was hurt more or less equally since all campuses and facilities at the Power 5 level are comparably attractive, and the same things that always determine recruiting outcomes, the state of the program and the skill of the recruiters, were dispositive instead. What do you think?
Interesting, Hitler Day. I love how he's just like his first paragraph was, I just want to tell you what I think. Now, my question doesn't have anything to do with that, but here's what I just wanted to I'm smart. Here's what I'm going to say. And then, for the question. I think in some cases, the stay close to home thing did work. We did see kids commit to places they've never visited to other states. I mean, people do that. They go to college, right? Like you get into college somewhere and you're from Iowa and you get into like the University of Miami and you never had even been there. And you go for your freshman year. Like that's when you first get to college. Like it happens sometimes. I don't think there's some hard, fast rule of what the pandemic did for recruiting. I think the biggest aspect is some states have high school football and others do not. And I think in general, the 2021 cycle, you got to see stuff early on. There's camps and things when they were juniors and all that. Now they got screwed. A lot of these kids got screwed out of their senior year, but they had some of the recruiting process early. You just couldn't do all the other stuff. For the class of 2022, it's a lot less, right? All those guys we were saying for class of 2021, if you were going to have your blowout senior year and you only had like a group of five offers and then you started getting Pac-12 offers, but you didn't get to play, that didn't happen. So a lot of kids missed out on their opportunity for these blowout senior seasons and to really rise their, get their stock raised up. But they might have had a good enough resume before. For me, for this cycle, there's not that much of a resume at all. And I think this one's going to be a lot tougher. So, Hitler, I would say go back and look at this cycle and see how well schools did. I think this is the one you would judge how well they navigated the pandemic more than 2021. But that's just, I literally just thought of that right now, but that's just off the top of my head. But that's what I think.
I don't think the baseline appeal of any school has been hurt or helped by the pandemic.
Makes sense.
Yeah, I can't imagine. I mean, because the implication would be it would be some way that those states or those schools dealt with the pandemic, right? That those would be the thing that hurt or helped. Correct?
Yeah.
And I can't imagine that's factoring into the calculus for anybody right now, but especially kids, because it's hopefully a once in a lifetime event, this sort of thing that happens. So, no, I don't think it's affected one way or the other, any school in terms of their baseline appeal to college kids or high school
like
kids.
Alabama and Ohio State are still going to recruit at a high level, yeah. Right? Like, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It's just sort of like that you're like the best looking kid in high school and you're the quarterback of the football team. Oh, they didn't have football. You're no longer the quarterback. Are you still sitting at the popular table at lunch? Like, yes. Right. doesn't matter.
Exactly.
Okay. This is feline favoritism. Uh-oh. I think we're getting in some more mascot talk. Hi, David and Ryan. This is from Derek. Been listening for a couple of seasons now. First time writing in. Hey, first of all, Derek, thank you for writing in. Because I know it takes some courage to have us read your crap on the air. Because you don't know what we're going to say. But thank you for writing in. I realized something while listening to the drops for the teams a few weeks ago. It seems like you guys play they meow for Cougars pretty often now. But why are they the ones getting the meow treatment when it's Arizona, who's on a 12-game losing streak? I know the Cougars aren't world beaters by any means, but at least they have a winning percentage above 0% last season. So what he's talking about is
Washington State Cougars
and the
Arizona Wildcats.
You know why that is, Derek. I can tell you why. Because somebody else created those drops for us, and we don't have the wherewithal, the desire, or anything to change it so that Arizona also has a meow. And if somebody wants to supply us with a meow for Arizona, with all of it connected, so it says Arizona Wildcats, meow, please, feel free.
We would play it, because we do have this one.
Washington State Cougars.
Which was sent in to us.
Yeah.
And it's very cool. So when Washington State's doing well, we use that one. But the original one is just because that was what was created. I mean, just in general, someone took the time to, we can't remember their name right now. Maybe you remember, David.
But, Washington fan, obviously.
Yeah. But it was so cool. And we use them all the time and we appreciate it. So Derek, I don't know how your audio skills are. Are you a big Audacity guy? And if you can do that, get in there. I think we have some of the raw stuff. We could probably send that to you.
Or anybody.
Yeah.
If you're an ASU fan and you want Arizona to have a meow, hit us up. And you know how to use, audio editing tools.
They definitely deserve a meow. Well, much more than Washington State right now. So.
Yeah. And like a sad meow. Like a really, like... I'm a hungry cat meow. Meow.
Let me in, please. But that is a pretty badass wildcat that we got there.
Yeah.
Undeserving of a 12-game losing streak. I love the above 20% above zero. So he says, anyway, keep up the work and be informed that this is a completely unbiased email that has nothing to do with Cal being in the midst of a 5-game losing streak against Arizona. While every other team in the conference has won their most recent game against the Wildcats. Oh, I didn't even think about that.
Wow.
Cal's a weird one, right? Like,
yeah, that's really weird.
One win this season, 2020.
Yep.
And it was against Oregon. So that's a weird one.
All right. This is from Rick. You ready?
Yes.
Adding to conference. Hi guys, I liked the discussion on possibly adding to the conference. I would agree that the conference should look into adding UH and SMU, so that's University of Houston and SMU. It would add big TV markets in Houston and Dallas. It would also add a good area for recruiting, making it 2 7 conference divisions, with South being SMU, Houston, Colorado, Utah, ASU, Arizona, and USC. And the North, UCLA, Cal, Stanford, Oregon, Oregon State, UW, and Washington State. What would you think about that? There's no flipping way they're ever flipping USC and UCLA into separate divisions.
Yeah, they're literally like 12 miles apart or something. I don't think you could put them in a separate division.
Yeah, no, I think it would be... I don't know that they would ever do this. I mean, adding two different ones, I think you might go... Would you go pods at that point?
It might be better. Like
do a Southwest pod, do a California pod.
But the Pacific Northwest schools would probably complain, right?
Yeah.
Because you were, so.
Well, you couldn't really do pods, actually, because it's 14 teams.
That's true. Yeah. We could do pods now.
Yeah, you can do pods now. Jeez. 14 teams. Whatever. 14 divides into something, right? 2-team pods, 7 of them.
Which would you split? Like, that's,
I think you
thing.
Would have to split Utah and Colorado because it's basically an irrelevant rivalry that they don't care about either. Keep Utah with the Arizona schools because they've got some natural built-up animosity already. And have them be in the division with. I think it would probably have to be Utah. Boy, I think you would have to go Utah, USC, UCLA, the Arizona schools. I mean, from a geographical standpoint, and then the Texas schools, and then Colorado with everybody who's currently in the North.
Yeah. I think that would work. Or could you split up Houston and SMU? Split up the newcomers.
You could, but I think you would want, if you're bringing in two from the same region, you would want them to have like a natural rivalry, which I guess you could have cross division, but I think it'd be easier if it was within the same division.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. Well, thank you. Yeah, so wait, that was it, right?
Yeah, that was it.
Okay. We have, oh man. Okay. Let me pull up this text message because it looks long. I think, is this right? Oh, no, here we go. This is at David. Burning question. Why is UCLA basketball, this is a text message from Choney19. Why is UCLA basketball so awesome? Another burning question. With the projected roster construction, the next few years, and what Cronin looks for in recruits, do you see there being an influx of crazy talent slash athleticism on a Baylor slash Alabama slash USC level to make UCLA even more elite?
Okay, so I'll answer these questions. Why is UCLA basketball so awesome? Gosh, what a great question. What a wonderful question. Because it's pure, you know, it's just great. I don't know, man, because they won a bunch of games in the NCAA tournament. It's really cool. I will say this, like, it has, I think, more than anything else in the last 13 years, has brought me back to, like, actually, like, I don't know.
You care.
I care at a level that I haven't cared about really anything. Like, even, like, the good Mora years were not at the level at which, like, I'm watching these basketball games. I was a complete psychopath during the last, like, 5 minutes of that Alabama game. The Sweet 16 game. Like, from the moment UCLA had it, like, 61-60, and then it was, like, a free throw shooting contest, I was standing up, jumping around like a lunatic. My four-year-old came into the room and just started, like, dancing around and, like, screaming because that's what I was doing. And, like, clearly was enjoying the experience, and it's very good that she had left the room suddenly when Alabama hit that three-pointer to tie it because otherwise she would have been mimicking something else. But like full lunacy, like absolute, like college level craziness. Like, and I was one of those dudes who was pretty demonstrative when I was watching like basketball games and they would go poorly. Like, I won't say I threw things, but certainly I threw some words, some choice words at a top volume, in the general direction of the court or refs or whatever. So it was pretty close to that. So I don't know. That was just something. That was interesting, you know? Being a lunatic again watching sports, because I haven't really done that since college. So that's one thing. And then with the projected roster construction, I think they're going to have an influx of a lot of talent, and I would expect, unless, you know, I mean, obviously it's UCLA, so the tires can always come flying off, but I would expect Cronin to be winning at a pretty high, sustainable level for a good long while here. You know, it's all vagaries of rosters, but I think they're set up right now. The likelihood that they lose like real significant key components of this team, aside from Cody Riley, are pretty slim. I think Johnny Juzang may test, but I think the feedback he's going to get is more than likely going to be to come back for a year. Cause he's not a top tier athlete. He's got some approach stuff that he needs to work on defensively. He's not great. So just, you know, working on maybe his approach to the game is going to be the feedback. So he's probably coming back, would be my guess. And then nobody else is an obvious NBA prospect. And I just think Cody Riley is going to want to move on. He's been in school for 4 years, but he could come back too. So I think you've got the roster that's there right now making this run that's more or less going to be intact next year. And you're going to add Peyton Watson to it and Will McClendon, potentially a transfer or two. So I think there's a lot of room to think that this team could be pretty good next year. And then in the future, just looking at the recruiting and who they're getting in California, you know, going Peyton Watson and Amari Bailey, you're talking about two elite tier athletes and talents who will be key components of each of those rosters. So, yeah, I mean, I think he's kind of recruiting the way a guy with his background should be recruiting at UCLA, which is, get your top tier guy, but then also leave in your roster with, you know, 3 and 4 year dudes. You know, don't only get your Peyton Watson, get your Jalen Clark, your Will McClendon, the guys who are going to form the backbone of your program and be the ones who are developing over the course of 4 years. Because he got those guys, they were already within the program. I think he lucked out a little bit in that the roster was already designed for a lot of guys who were going to be developmental guys. You've got Jules Bernard in there who was fine enough last year but made a huge leap this year and is now a starter and one of the guys getting 28-plus minutes a game. Jaime Jaquez is that guy. You know, he's one of these glue-ish guys who I think by his fourth year he might be a player of the year candidate. And here as a sophomore, he's making huge impact plays in the NCAA tournament. And now it's just about, you know, adding that star component each year, which he's already shown a tendency to do. So anyway, I mean, things could always go wrong. I mean, it's UCLA, it's basketball, and obviously weird things can happen. But as it looks right now, I think he's set up for quite a bit of success, at least for the next couple of years.
Yeah. He also says, for me, with Evan Mobley leaving for the NBA, what's the future of USC basketball looking like? 2019. I mean, I think it's still bright. They're still recruiting at a high level. Obviously, getting a guy that's going to be a top three pick in the draft makes a big difference. But there was a lot of games where he was just, you know, he was there. He wasn't like, you know, the superstar. Isaiah Mobley could come back. He wasn't a starter his freshman year and played, I thought, really well. You know, a very efficient player, you know, playing with his brother. You know, that'd be good for them if they could get back. All those, and most of those transfers worked out well that they brought in. So, yeah, I think they're still, you know, like Dave said, I think he's been, Andy Enfield's been a great collector of talent. I'm no basketball coaching expert, but, you know, there's probably some shortcomings there. But he's going to put together a talented team that, you know, has potential. And, you know, they had the potential this year, and they actually took advantage of it.
Yeah.
We got one text that just says, I'm happy for Dave.
I love it. That's nice. All right, we've got another one, another text message. David, you're killing me. It's now Thursday, and you've had me waiting for 3-plus days. You have a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to make Ryan talk USC basketball, which we all know he loves to talk about, in the context of USC shitting the bed and UCLA advancing to the Final Four. I've been waiting with bated breath for 3-plus days now for what will likely be a phenomenal 2 minutes of podcast. I can't take it anymore. Well, I hope we satisfied that. I don't think I made you talk USC basketball nearly enough. I
spoke about USC basketball as much as I know about it. I had to do it more for my shows, and we did talk more basketball, and people are like getting on me like, you don't want to talk about basketball. I'm like, I mean, I've heard just too many times going into a season, they got this guy, they got this guy, they're going to be amazing. I'm like, and then they don't even make the tournament. I'm like, you know, for our business, football rules, right? Like, that's what drives the needle. Even for the UCLA site,
This is 100% true. It's that, look, when UCLA makes a deep run in the NCAA tournament, it matters. Like, it does affect things, and it does bring traffic that wouldn't have otherwise been there. But UCLA football, like, the lead up to signing day, the lead up to the season, like, these are the times where the site is just churning people in and out. Like, people are coming and checking it out all the time. So, yeah, no, I mean, football is the driver. Basketball is a nice addition when it happens, but even for UCLA, football is the driver.
And for me, you're not, for UCLA, if you have, like, you sign a top recruit, or, like, you can get probably more traction out of that in, you know, November or something, where it's harder to do that for USC. To me, it was about show me a run in the tournament and then I'll care, you know, and actually the fans cared. Like, it really did help drive traffic. We created a ton of content. We didn't ignore basketball, and even I didn't ignore basketball, but really it was about, to me, it's like, hey, prove it, you know, show something's going to happen. I didn't think it was going to be, you know, fruitful. And I didn't think it's not just about like, hey, this is going to make money. It's about what the fans are going to care about. They would have cared about a Pac-12 tournament title or a regular season title, but they started caring at the end of the season, you know, beating UCLA a couple of times. They cared about that. So, you know, there were some landmarks along the way, like, oh, you swept UCLA, you know, you beat Oregon. Like, those kind of things were like, you know, but then they would do something like get swept by the mountain schools and lose to Colorado six times in a row or whatever. So, but there was more ups than downs. So I was more kind of into it, you know, like, okay, this is actually, they actually look like a decent team. And then obviously, you know, making around the tournament, you got, you know, Shotgun Spratling was in Indianapolis covering the game. So we didn't go for the first two rounds,
was
but
he,
once they
was
advanced.
He in Indianapolis or was he in Indianapolis?
Do you like how they just reused that commercial from the last time they had the Final Four in Indianapolis?
People keep saying that, and I must, like, the thing is, and this should be obvious now about me, I don't watch it if it's, like, UCLA's not involved. Like, I don't. So I'd never seen the stupid commercial before, and then I'm like, this is the worst goddamn thing I've ever seen in my life.
It's pretty bad. Some of those are funny. That's bad.
It's so bad. It's so bad, and I'm just... How did you get those people involved and that's the crap you wrote for them?
Can I do a little capitalist rant real quick?
Please, bring it.
Okay. Do you watch those Capital One commercials?
They're really bad.
But it is star-studded. How much does it cost to get all of those legends in those commercials? Not just one or two. You'll get like five or six like A-listers in those commercials. There's no way they're doing that. If they're not making a shit ton of money.
You're not making... So you think you're making a capitalist rant here? You are making a communist rant. Because it's... Why does Capital One have so much money that they can pay those people that much money to star in such shitty commercials? Like, that is... You have too much money. Sorry, bank. You have too much money. You need to not have so much money because you are not using it right. You are not using it in a valuable way. You need to have your money taken from you.
I want to help people and just be like, look, they're having those commercials because some of us out there get these credit cards and they charge stuff on them because you don't have to pay for it right now. And then the interest builds up and you buy $100 something that ends up costing you $500. Like, don't do that. If you can, pay your credit cards down. Use your credit card if you want to. Get your miles. Do whatever. But pay it off at the end of the month. If you can't pay it off at the end of the month, you probably shouldn't buy that thing. That's my little, you know, try to be financially responsible rant. So if you do that, then they don't make crap tons of money on all the interest. And then they don't have all those A-listers in those commercials that suck.
Right. But unfortunately, Capital One has a much better understanding of human behavior than you with your idealistic world bullshit about, oh yeah, you're not going to do this thing that's bad for you.
I'm just trying to help. Do you ever read the book, The Wealthy Barber?
No, I didn't read the book, The Wealthy Barber.
I don't know.
What are you even asking me?
It's just, you know, it's like about saving, about, okay, you know, just trying to help out a little.
What the hell's a wealthy barber? There's no wealthy.
It's a guy that just, you know, he... lived within his means, put money away.
Shilton. Oh, Jesus. What is this?
Compound interest. You know, like, you know, it's just, it's good for some.
Oh, my God. Okay, everyone out there. Ryan is the kind of guy who reads something that is in the genre business fable. It's a financial planning book franchise by Canadian author David Shilton. You're out here advising me with my limited free time to read a financial planning fiction book? Are you out of your mind? Are you out of your gourd, sir?
You could probably use it, David.
Oh, Jesus. Sweet. Mother of God. How many of these have you read? Did you read The Richest Man in Babylon? You read The Wealthy Barber Returns?
No, I only read the first one.
What is this?
It's really
this
just about compound.
No, this
interest.
Is like a whole new world I wasn't even aware of. What? Like a business fable genre. I didn't even know that's what it was.
I didn't know either. It's just it's a fictional tale about this dude that like didn't make a ton of money, but put a bunch of money away, and he ends up...
This is 100% just, like, the exact, like, perfect depiction of post-Reagan American society. Like, just... And it's all of these books were in, like, exactly that period. Like, from 1982 to, like, the early 2000s. Every single one I'm looking at in this genre. Jesus Christ.
An American utopia. That's what
you're saying. Oh my God. I'm going to vom. I'm going to throw up.
I needed to take you down. I wanted to say
the wealthy barber. Jesus.
You were too hot. You were just too excited, David. I needed to throw you a curveball.
Oh my God. If you've read this book, I want to hear a review. All right? Anybody out there, if you've read this, I want to hear your unvarnished take on it. But I have a feeling the only people who've read it are people who are heavily indoctrinated already. Mm. But I want to hear it.
Let's see if anyone heard it. Yeah. Well, that's good stuff. We don't have anything else, huh? That was it.
That was it. That was the magic. I hope people enjoyed it.
Would you just real quick, since you did watch a lot of the tournament because UCLA was in it, what did you think of the commercials overall?
I don't know. Some of them are very annoying, but that's generally the case with all commercials. I would love to do like an analysis of commercials 20 years ago versus now, because I would say there are fewer of them, not in terms of quantity during the breaks, but that there are fewer companies advertising. It seems like it's the same goddamn like four companies all the time. Like that Liberty, Liberty, Liberty. Like that,
oh my God,
thing.
Those are bad. That like makes they're me, trying to be
yeah,
funny.
No, that makes not. Me want to set fire to something. Capital One.
What annoyed me was the guy singing and his hood ornament was singing. It just, that was creepy.
Oh yeah, dude, there's just some bad ones. What's the one with the like real estate company where it's playing, Simon and Garfunkel?
Oh shoot. I know what you're talking about.
That one's okay. Like it's at least, you know, it tugs at the heartstrings a little bit and it's got good music at least. I don't know, man. I try to tune it out as much as I can, but like it's one of the few times during the year where I'm like consistently paying attention to live TV.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's just the Liberty ones are really bad, and then the Capital One ones make me want to commit crimes.
But you can tell who's doing well, right? Like, can every single company out there save you $700 on your car insurance? Like the fact that how much money do these insurance companies make? If you can, every one of them is just advertising the crap out of their stuff, and you know, Geico and Progressive and all that stuff.
Do you understand the like very tiny step you have to take from that to being like a full pinko like communist? Like, do you understand? Like to make that critique and then just get there. Like, you just got to take a tiny step.
I'm not saying it's wrong that they're doing it. I'm saying we need to realize, like, if you see. Why are there a billion mattress stores? Because they make a shitload of money. Because there's like these high overheads, and you can just keep having more mattress stores. Because every time they sell a mattress, it costs them $100, and they sell it for $1,500. There wouldn't be that many mattress stores if they weren't profitable. There wouldn't be that many auto insurance, car insurance commercials if those things weren't profitable. Like if they just, you know, getting someone to switch to their brand,
but the
make
thing
them
is,
a lot of money.
The thing is, with insurance, you're not selling anything that's actually tangible. You're selling something that's a fake thing. Like, you're just selling fake bullshit. Like, it's nothing. It's just words on a piece of paper. Mattress, yeah. You're selling a mattress. Like, I get it at some level that, like, the cost involved in making it, whatever, there's an expertise to it, whatever. That for some reason it comes out to that value. Though, if you wanted to tell me dark tales of how price setting works in the mattress industry, I'd be happy to hear it. But insurance? Like, we're supposed to talk about those as if that's a financial success story. Great, they make a lot of money by what? Charging people for nothing? Like, for something, and oftentimes not even fulfilling their obligations that are in their contracts? No, that's just something that we've propped up, and that's, you know, in a just world, it's probably illegal.
It's funny, because we, you know, it's mandate. Like, you can't drive your car unless you have insurance. It's mandate. Right. You know, the government mandates that you do that. Is that a universal thing, like across other countries?
I don't even know. I would love to know. Yeah. I mean, and I think in other countries, it's actually much harder to get a license most places. So that's another thing. But also in other countries, you generally don't have to drive nearly as much as you do in the United States because of a bunch of other stuff. It is a vast pyramid of things that is, you know, at the bottom, generally due to racism. America.
We got the racism, okay.
Yeah, well, because the reason there are freeways. It's generally because of the racism. Also the size, but the size was also, you know, Manifest Destiny and all that good stuff. Great stuff.
I mean, like, China builds, like, crap loads of freeways and cities and stuff. Is that because of racism?
A lot of rail. A lot of rail in China. A lot of trains. A lot of trains.
There is a lot of trains, for sure.
Yeah, we got a lot of trains. We got a lot of passenger trains going between places.
Not a ton.
No, we don't do that.
But they got
We got any high-speed rail
here? Anyways, dude, but they got a lot more people than us.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're pretty up there. We got, like, 330 million.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. They're in the billions.
But we could probably have some, I mean, not billions. I mean,
is it 2 billion yet, or is it close? It's close, isn't
it? No, they're not cranking at 2 billion yet. Come on.
1.6 or something like that?
China population, I'm guessing it's like 1.2. Let's see. All right, we're at 1.4 in China. Let's see what India, now India is cranking. India's at 1.36, but I want to say that started out, so India hit,
India's caught up.
India caught hit up. A billion in 1997, and now they're 360 million over that. China was at 1.23 billion in 97, and now they are just at 1.4. So okay. India's on a mission here.
Right. Well, China also had laws that wouldn't allow you to have more than one kid.
Yeah, they were going a little hard on it. India, I don't know that they had any population control laws. I think China relaxed most of that recently, but I don't think it's popped back up. They need a, and it was probably short sighted. They're probably making some mistakes with that whole population control thing.
It's hard because when you do that, it's sort of like turning a cruise ship or something, or a battleship, right? Like
you sort of carrier. Demotivated people to get it on, right? And
but then it's like you thing. Can't just like start and stop it real simply. You know, you gotta
there's a natural a while to
crank that up again.
And there's a natural, I think, more or less for much of the world. I won't say global because I don't know the birth rates everywhere, but there's a generally depressed birth rate in a lot of places now due to increasingly apocalyptic conditions, one might say.
Fucking world, yeah.
Yeah. So
we really have gone off the rails here. Holy
cow. This is great. This is the best stuff. This is for the this is Pac-12 Podcast After Dark right now.
At least this was at the very, very end. So someone could have, you know, if they didn't shut this off when I was talking about Pac-12
news, that's their own fault.
If they didn't shut it off when you were talking about UCLA's basketball recruiting class for the next 8 years, they probably shut it off now.
Anyone who's still listening right now, it's their own fault.
We blame you.
Yeah. We're right, barely listening to each other right now.
Basically. We have just a fun conversation that happens to be recorded and played for thousands of people. But, okay, whatever.
Whatever. Right, I sang them a song today, Ryan. I sang the people a song. Whatever we do right now is gravy.
Yes. Yeah, and you did a good job. I mean, I don't think you have a wonderful singing voice, but it was I would say it was serviceable.
No, that's what I'm saying. I am dad in a shower. That's what I've got. I've got dad in a shower.
You are way better than I would be singing. And I have the desire. Like, I like to perform. I would love to be able to sing, and I cannot. But just doing what you did, kudos. That was great.
Dad in a shower.
That's David, Dad in a Shower. I'm Ryan. Thanks for listening to the podcast of Champions, talking some Pac-12 football and a lot of other stuff. Hope you enjoyed the show, and we will talk to you next time.
Goodbye!
From the world of Sonic the Hedgehog, a new hero arrives.
I am
ready. Is there anyone stronger?
No.
Tougher?
No.
Funnier?
I do not make jokes. I make warriors.
Knuckles, now streaming only on Paramount+.
Yes!